The Fantasy Six Pack Hour. With your hosts, Joe Bob.
Ah, you're awful.
And AJ Applegar.
It's a mouthful.
All right, welcome to the Fantasy Six Pack Hour. My name is Joe Bond, founder of FantasySixPack.net. With me tonight is our producer, not AJ, Jeff Hicks. You ready for this, man?
Yeah. Actually, as you can see here, I got some new wall art too.
Nice.
My sister for my birthday got the Ghostbusters 2 painting at the very end of the movie with all four Ghostbusters and Oscar the baby.
Nice, man.
Because we have a very weird sense of humor with each other. So
it's all good, man. I got some new stuff behind me too. Went to the Orioles game last night. Got the Orioles Hall of Fame mascot bobblehead. So that's nice. And then something we're gonna be giving out at the expo. These babies just showed up.
Yes.
Our S6P helmets. We're giving away four of these at the expo. So if you're there, stop by our booth and enter to win some of these. They are nice, man. I was super excited when they showed up.
Yeah, that was real sharp.
I couldn't have been more excited when they showed up and pulled them out of the box. I was like, oh man, they actually look awesome.
And they showed up, which is half the battle.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, that that was like a 3-month battle. Anyway, unfortunately AJ can't join us tonight. He's not feeling so good. So and we're doing it on Sunday, which isn't normal. I was on vacation last week, and thankfully we're able to make this work. So we're doing the NFC South preview tonight. It'll be a good time, and our guest of honor tonight is Samantha Previte. I might have butchered that name.
I forgot to ask you.
Why don't you just tell me how it's pronounced? I think I asked you the last time you were on, and I forgot.
No worries. No one really gets it right on the first try. So Praviti. It's Praviti, like graffiti.
Oh, Praviti. I do.
Yes. There you go.
I totally remember. I was like, ah. As soon as you said it, I was going to, like, damn it.
I remember stuff like that.
Yeah. It's all good. So how are you doing tonight, Samantha?
I'm doing great. Thank you so much. Excited that football's sort of back and kind of getting into the swing of things, and I've just been out in Colorado enjoying all of mountain life here.
I see all your tweets and your TikToks with all the skiing, and I'm super jealous. It looks awesome.
Do you guys ski or snowboard?
Generally uber athletic.
I've skied a couple of times. I'm not like awesome at it, but I make do. I have fun with it though.
Very cool. Very cool. What about you, Jeff?
You would definitely kill me.
I have gone once.
Okay.
It was in high school, so half a lifetime ago. And I was that guy, you know how you're supposed to make sure everything's secured, you know, with your skis, you know, and poles. I was the guy that was walking around picking them up when I fell one time because I exploded. It was really...
That's called a yard sale, if you're curious.
Well, this was everything must go yard sale. It was brutal, but I would love to do it again. Like, closest place to me is Wisconsin, like Lake Geneva area.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just... It's not realistic with two kids.
No,
but Colorado
yeah.
is beautiful. I've been there, so.
Kids gave me the picture, and skiing got ended real quick.
Yeah.
I totally feel on that one, man.
One pole, pretty much.
Yeah, when we went skiing, me and my wife, we went, and, you know, you learn, you know, when you first go, you learn to go side, right? You know, slow, steady down, especially at the beginning, right? She was just like, I was doing this one time, and she just goes right by me, and I was like, "That's a bad idea." And then I watched her like tumble. And I was like, "Yep, yeah." That's pretty much why I was talking like that. But okay,
I think that one's called a tomahawk.
Yeah,
everything has like a different term.
I'm sure it does.
Because I've done all of them too. To be clear.
I've seen the pictures of your spills, man. They are nasty.
Yeah.
Whew.
I definitely hurt myself a lot. So I'm like a crash test dummy. I'm always wearing the red non-contact jerseys. All the soft tissue injuries, but I'm good.
That's good times. All right, well, let's get the show on the road. Before we do it, though, let's do our beer of the week.
Beer.
All right, Samantha, you are the guest of honor, so you can have at it first.
Cool. Well, I am drinking this sour rosé. It is a fruited sour ale from a local Colorado brewery called Crooked Stave, and it's very popular. I feel like I see it in every bar, and it's very yummy. I'm very into the sours.
Nice. Jeff, you guys are going to ruin me tonight. I don't have my IPA buddy tonight.
Clearly, the NFL knowledge is there, but because she makes good choices in beer. Mm. So I am drinking the Black Cherry Supreme. It is also a tart ale. Go figure. It is from Surly Brewing Company in Minneapolis, Minnesota. I've actually been to that brewery. Very nice place. It is actually part of an entire Supreme line. They have four different sours that they actually put together. And the Black Cherry is actually one of the better ones.
Yum.
All right. So I, lone IPA buddy here, I'm going back to my thing. We're a Foundation Brewing Company. I'm drinking the Epiphany. It's actually a Maine IPA. So I was on vacation this past week in Rehoboth, and I found a beer store that actually had a Maine brewery line there. And I've heard a lot of good things about Maine IPAs, so I figured I had to try one, and it lived up to the hype here. I gave it a 4.5 on Untappd. Definitely one of the top-notch IPAs I've had. It's an 8%er, and yeah, I'm enjoying it. I enjoyed two of these already. I got one more in the fridge, so they're not going to last long. These are good stuff. So, I sent out the tweet. If anybody's coming to the expo that can get a hold of Maine beers, Treehouse Brewery, I'm begging for this stuff. Like, this is stuff I can't find anywhere down here, so I need it. Please, somebody hook me up. So,
I'm cheers. So jealous, by the way, that you guys are going to the expo. I assume both of you were going to the expo.
I am.
Yes.
I'm not. I get out on it too late, and, you know, flight prices were a little bit out of. Yeah. So,
well, I'm driving.
Yeah. I'm close enough to drive, thankfully. I'm 5 hours away, so it's not that bad. But yeah, I don't think I could fly at this point.
Oh, I'm 8 hours, so.
Okay.
Yeah. I also had a 15-hour drive to Georgia 2 weeks ago, so what's 8 at this point?
That's crazy. I don't know how far the drive is from Denver, but I assume it's probably like in the range of 20 hours. So
yeah. Yeah. From Colorado, probably not super doable. So.
Yeah.
I get it.
Well, I'll miss you guys. We will have not. Total FOMO. So
yeah, unfortunately, we will miss you too. I actually kind of just expected you to be there. And that's kind of a shame that you're not. So anyway, let's get on with the show. We're talking NFC South. So what we do here is we're gonna break down each position, go through the teams and the ADP. But first, we'd like to ask one standard question. About the division, not really fantasy related, just kind of NFL question in general. And this one is, you know, with so much turnover in this division, the teams that did not win the Super Bowl, you know, Breeze retired, you got Julio gone, Teddy being traded, you know, Gurley, for what it's worth, is gone. there's a lot of change in this division. Like, this is just like a foregone conclusion that Tampa Bay is just going to run away with this one, or do you see another team possibly giving them a challenge?
It's really tough. I feel like Tampa Bay is going to run away with it. Vegas feels that way. The Bucs are -700 to make the playoffs. They are +200 to be the one seed actually out of the NFC. They are +500 to go 6-0 against the NFC South. So I don't think that Vegas thinks this is going to be the strongest division, and they are -200 to win the division outright. So distant second would be the Saints at +350. And they have the second best odds to win the division behind their respective division behind the Chiefs. So definitely feels like they're going to be a strong team. They're one of the teams that actually stayed pretty consistent year over year. Like, they kept a lot of the free agents that I didn't think that they would necessarily be able to keep. So I think that all kind of spells for positive things. And then on the flip side, like you mentioned, there are a lot of teams in that division that have gone through a lot of change. I think my personal team, the Carolina Panthers, are in a very weird, I don't even want to call it rebuild because we don't have a quarterback. So, but let's just call it a rebuild for now. Yeah, they are projected to be the fourth in the division. So not super, super promising. The Falcons should be in a rebuild, I think, in my opinion. Yeah. And yeah, the Saints, like, the quarterback situation stall is pretty up in the air. So yeah, I do think the Bucs are going to run away with this one.
I agree. And Jeff, I don't know if you've got any other second opinions. I think it's Tampa's to lose.
If it wasn't for Atlanta kind of going the Kyle Pitts route too, it kind of started the free fall for Justin Fields, which helps my team that grew up watching the Bears. So, but like, that's one of those things, like you mentioned, that Atlanta probably should be in a rebuild. Well, they would at least be in a slower, you know, chance of not falling off as much if they would have drafted probably a quarterback like Fields, at least learn for a year before they switch everything, and then you still go and add other pieces. But yeah, this division kind of sucks.
Yeah, needless to say,
it's interesting because it's one of those like distribution of wealth things, because there are divisions that are so strong that like all four teams could be over 500, and then this division that's not going to put up too much of a fight, I don't think.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, at least they got one good team. It's not like the NFC East where you're just going like, is anybody going to finish in the 500? I mean,
I'm
anybody.
All in on the Washington Fielder? Football team.
Yeah. All right. we'll see. All right. Moving on here. Let's jump into the quarterbacks and the ADP here. We got Tom Brady at QB10, Matt Ryan at 14. We got Sam Darnold at 24. And then we got the pair from New Orleans, Taysom Hill at 30 and Jameis Winston at 31. Yeah, don't know what to say about that. But let's start here with the Falcons. And, you know, they still have a very questionable rushing attack here. And, of course, they don't have Julio Jones. They brought in Kyle Pitts. Russell Gage is a big up-and-coming talent that everybody's talking about here. But Matt Ryan, you know, is still one of those guys who he's going to sling the ball a lot. But, you know, what's his floor for you this year?
Yeah, he finished his QB13 last year with Jones having the injury-plagued season, only appearing in 9 games. And those 9 games, it didn't feel like he was at full strength. Now, obviously, they lost a very significant weapon, even though he was injured. But they add Kyle Pitts, who I'm so all in on, with the number 4 overall pick. Now, I don't necessarily think I actually agree with you, Jeff, that like they probably should have gone quarterback there. Probably should have taken Justin Fields,
yep.
But they didn't. And they've got another weapon for Matt Ryan, so I think he's going to be fine. I think his floor is his ADP, I feel like, and he has a much higher ceiling in that like mid to low end QB1 range. So I think you're getting good value for him. Like, you know, you can get him in a lot of drafts as your second quarterback.
Yeah, I think easily as your second quarterback is fine. I'm doing a lot of, you know, best ball and super flex drafts right now. And he's a guy who I haven't been able to land. It just drafts haven't gone that way for me, but he's a guy that I'm targeting, especially in, you know, best balls as like a second quarterback. Type of guy, you know, especially if I go later quarterback rounds. But I think the volume is going to be there huge because, I mean, the defense is still trash.
Exactly.
And so, you know, Calvin Johnson.
Hey.
Yeah, man, Calvin, hey, really.
Got a full jacket tonight now.
Yeah, man. Yeah. Ridley, really still a monster. And, you know, everybody's, I think we all know Pitts is, talent is there. It's just a matter of whether or not it's actually going to work out. But I mean, he's still, the volume is going to be there for Matt Ryan big time. And yeah, I think he can easily finish in the top end of the QB2 range, and he'll be a QB1 a lot of weeks, I feel like, for, you know, for those trying to stream quarterbacks for sure. So,
yeah, let's move on to Carolina. Like you mentioned, you don't feel like the Panthers have a quarterback, but at least it's something different. Sam Darnold clearly gets a new chance. He's not in New York anymore. He doesn't have the media breathing down his neck, especially coming from a totally different coast.
Is that a job at the New York Post that I used to work at? I'm just kidding.
No. We read your articles. Don't worry. They were good.
I'm literally just kidding.
But now that he's in Carolina, he has a more offensively driven coach, and it's not Adam Gase. Is there really any expectations to have for Sam Darnold, at least for a one-year turnaround?
Yeah, I mean, you can't even put Adam Gase and, like, Joe Brady and Matt Rhule in the same sentence in the same spectrum. He has definitely never been given the opportunity that he's not been set up for success in the Jets system. He's never been surrounded by weapons. There's just been a lot of dysfunction there. So I think that he definitely has the capability of having this like post Adam Gase glow up that I think a lot of people that kind of escaped Adam Gase's system have seen in the past. That said, you know, we have seen some concerning things from Darnold in the past. I think that it's going to be a lot. They're going to have to build up his confidence a little bit more. The Carolina offensive line is a lot stronger than the Jets offensive line. That's not saying too much because the Jets offensive line was really bad last year, but maybe he'll see fewer ghosts. So, I mean, yeah, his like ADP is QB 32 or something like that. I think he finishes higher than QB 32, but like maybe he's like a guy in a two quarterback league that would be nice to have, but not necessarily someone that's on your radar if you're in a standard league.
Yeah,
it's tough for me to trust Sam Darnold. Like, I know the Adam Gase factor was there, and so do I expect him to be better? Sure. I'm just not really sure he's that good, like, to be honest. Like, I didn't really like him coming out of college, to be honest. Like, I thought his USC tape wasn't that great. He threw a lot of interceptions at USC, and it carried over to the NFL. And, I mean, that's pretty much all you can say. Like, he's very erratic when it comes to playing quarterback. And so the decision-making isn't what I liked coming out of college. And, you know, Adam Gase or not, it hasn't worked. So he needs to prove it to me before I give him a chance, even in the 2 QB league.
Okay, well, here I got a follow-up. Sorry, Samantha. I'll start with you, Samantha, with this. Do you feel that Darnold finishes the QB 25 or ends up being more of the streamer turned QB starter in fantasy leagues? So completely out of QB, you know, like 2 QBs, you know, being like 25th, or do you feel like he ends up being a streamer that turns into a fantasy starter? What do you think is more likely?
The former.
Yeah.
I think of the range of outcomes, that probably lends itself more to him being QB 25. I talked about the weapons. Like, he's got a lot better weapons. He's never had a true wide receiver one. I think, you know, DJ Moore, Christian McCaffrey, those are going to be points for fantasy, and I'm not sure if they put it together for actual like wins NFL wise, but there will be points to be had. But I don't necessarily think he's gonna vault himself into that starter territory.
Yeah, I'm not feeling it. Moving on.
Might as well take the two opposite ends of the spectrum and see what.
Yeah. All right. So New Orleans, we kind of talked about this a little earlier. Breeze is now gone. We have literally no clue what's going on with the quarterback situation there. Taysom Hill, Jameis Winston. Who's it going to be? Like, if you had to draft one of these guys, who are you drafting and why?
I am drafting Jameis Winston, and I actually like him as a late pick. If his ADP is in the 30s, I assume, I think that totally makes sense as a late deep round pick. He's currently favored on DraftKings to take the Saints first snap at -150. So I think that I've refused to accept a universe where like Sean Payton, one of the greatest offensive masterminds of our generation, actually thinks Taysom Hill is the better NFL quarterback. I think that Jameis will win the job, but Peyton will find, like, he'll shoehorn Taysom Hill into a lot of situations. I think it'll be a little messy. That said, I think I think the fantasy community is with me that we all kind of hope to see Jameis Winston, not just for, like, because he helps, you know, Michael Thomas and Alvin Kamara, but also because he's just, like, a fun player to watch. So I
want to like 30 and 30.
I want to see the 30 for 30. I want to see 1,000 yards. Give it to me. Like, I don't think Sean Payton is going to let him throw 30 interceptions, but he'll probably have a shooter leash. But I'd like to see some. I think we'll see some improvement. I think there's been word out of camp that he's shown a lot more maturity, just being in the Saints system and kind of sitting backseat to Hill, even last season when Hill got the starts over Winston. But if we're just talking NFL quarterback wise, I really think Winston's going to get the job.
And not even just that too, like Winston's going to have some of the risks taken away because, you know, Hill's going to be in red zone packages in some way, shape or form, whether it's under center or lined up somewhere else. You still have Alvin Kamara, even though Winston really isn't a check down type of person. It's still another safer option that can still remain closer to line of scrimmage. We've been talking about Adam Trautman so much, you know, there's so many, you know, pieces on him as potential breakout. And even like, even though Michael Thomas isn't there, there's still a potential half season where you could still see him out there and be another red zone target too. So it just feels a little bit safer. Like at least Michael Thomas can be the Mike Evans for him. And then you add a real running back and a probably potentially better coach for him with Sean Payton than what he had in Tampa.
So I don't disagree with either one of you. The fact that Winston should and probably will win the starting job. One thing I heard, and I forget who said it on SiriusXM, is that with this Michael Thomas injury, it turns the Saints into a more run-focused team. And so with that said, maybe the first few games while Thomas is out, could they just turn to Taysom Hill to keep this a more run-focused team and keep defenses off balance? It's something that was brought up, and I thought, I was like, huh, that's actually an interesting idea. What are your thoughts on that?
Samantha. I don't necessarily think that they're going to completely shift. Now, I think that what we might see early season are very different packages and different sort of schemes, just as they're kind of figuring things out and seeing what works. They don't have a definitive starter right now. And I think that when, like, whoever gets the first snap, that doesn't mean that they're going to get the week two snap, for instance. So I think that we will see maybe some variety, especially without Michael Thomas, you know, one of the most dominant wide receivers in the league. We may see a little bit of variety. And, you know, you mentioned about like Alvin Kamara and Jameis Winston not being a check down guy. I think that Sean Payton might, you know, make him be more of a check down guy.
Force the issue a little bit. Like, hey, he's pretty good. Get him the ball.
Yeah. I mean, utilize the weapons that are there. So, I don't think that they're necessarily going to like totally shift towards a run focused offense. I think
play calling is going to be a big deal with Winston. It's going to make him so much more valuable, in my opinion.
He has LASIK now. So I don't know.
Hey, I mean, hey. That's all that matters. Move him up my board.
He's got 30-30 vision.
All right, let's jump into the running backs here. And we got some good ones in this division, as we've mentioned already. Christian McCaffrey, number one. Alvin Kamara, number four. You could argue higher. I'm actually kind of surprised it's four. Mike Davis, 23. Ronald Jones, 32. Leonard Fournette, 36. Latavius Murray, 46. Gio Bernard, 53. Chuba Hubbard, 60. Chuba, I don't know. I always like to say Chuba. Sorry. This is what I do. Would. 64. And Javian Hawkins, 76. Yeah, so jumping into these Falcons here. So, you know, we already mentioned that it's a less than desirable rushing attack here. But, you know, Mike Davis is seemingly the guy that everybody is buying into. And, you know, he had a pretty good season for Carolina last year, as you know, as a fan. Is he the question number one running back for this team, or is there somebody else that you think is going to play into the mix here enough to knock him down?
He is the unquestioned one right now as things stand. I mean, the guy finished his RB12 and half PPR through 16 weeks last season. Three of those games were backing up CMC. So, I mean, he had a phenomenal season kind of out of nowhere. Like, he's one of those guys that, like, just completely gets overlooked. Like, James Robinson was the guy that everyone was talking about. But, like, Mike Davis came out of nowhere and really, I think, saved a lot of people's fantasy teams last year. So he's being drafted. Love to see it. Love to see it. Love to see some strong waiver wire games. So, he's currently being drafted as RB24. I don't think he finishes the top 12 guy, especially since Atlanta is very pass heavy. Like, I think we'll just see a little bit less of him than Carolina. But I like him at that ADP. He's a guy that I've been able to get fairly late in drafts. I mean, Javian Hawkins is a guy that I'm sort of interested much later on. I think Mike Davis can't carry all the water for the whole team.
There's some also talk about Allison or whatever his name is.
Kadri Allison.
Kadri Allison, yeah. There's some talk about him, too. I just don't buy it, really.
Yeah.
Hawkins is the guy. If someone
hits the line here of the snaps and everything, it's going to be Davis, at least for now. And then, you know, we did see a little bit, you know, with Carolina giving him such a significant workload last year that he did taper off a little bit, so we'll see if workload and everything like that takes a toll on him. But I don't see him getting quite as many touches as last year, but I like him at RB24.
Yeah, this is a different offense, so yeah, the workload isn't going to be there quite as much as it was last year for Carolina, but I do think he's going to be solid. Jeff, do you have any disagreements there?
My thought is, do you really want to give Kadri Olsen enough carries to where you're taking away from Mike Davis? That's not to say Mike Davis was a sub 4 yard per carry guy last year. He's just not an elite runner.
No, and that's why he's going RB23 right now.
Especially after what?
And that's half PPR, by the way.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Like, he excels in the passing game. So you're going to see a little bit taken away from, you know, the running stuff, and it's going to go more towards the passing. And who knows that the Falcons are even good enough to run the ball, you know, more than, you know, 20, 25 times a game. And that's where he's going to, you know, get his bread butter pretty much. And Javian Hawkins, he weighs less than me. That's an issue. So
how much does Javian Hawkins weigh? I don't know this.
180 pounds. It's okay. Really not. All right,
that's like, that's me. Like, damn, yeah, so I'm not playing football. Hell yeah, no. Yeah,
so, like, he's got the speed, but he's a rookie. He's going to take time. He's going to be a special teamer. He's going to be a guy that's going to be a returner, too. So, you know, it's going to do this. We'll add you to the running game probably later. So I just think Mike Davis just probably has a lot lower ceiling than people may have been aiming for earlier in the preseason.
Yeah, Davis is a guy that I've been getting as, like, you know, if I get like a Christian McCaffrey, if I've got like the first pick in a best ball league, I wait for my second running back a lot more in underdog, and then maybe take a Davis in like round 5 or 6. Like, that's where I've been grabbing him, and at that point I'm fine with it.
Joe, did we just become best friends? Because that's my Scott Fishbowl league. Like, I got CMC and I got Mike Davis in like round 7. So
wow, that's pretty phenomenal. that is great value there. So I like him. I think he can do well. I worry, like, he did start to taper off as the season went on last year. Like, I had him in a league, and he was great for like 6 weeks, and then it was like he was just sort of a guy after that, it felt like. So I wouldn't get too hyped up about him, but he's gonna get some work. But let's move over here to, we'll kind of combo some teams here, Carolina and New Orleans. Jeff, go ahead.
Yeah, so we brought up Christian McCaffrey real quick. He's healthy again. We have Alvin Kamara. You have two of arguably the top 5 running backs in fantasy and real life football in the same division. You're paying a premium when you're taking CMC first. Obviously, there's very little guarantee that he finishes as the top player, because that's very, very tough to do when you're drafted at high. If they're both healthy this year, is it realistic to think that Alvin Kamara finishes above McCaffrey in points, whether it's standard or PPR, because they both have very similar roles?
Yeah, I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility, even if they both stay healthy, that Kamar could finish as the RB1 for fantasy. But I also think that CMC is the, like, that's the easiest pick of your draft if you have the 101 pick. I think the injuries last season, none of those are like, they're not ACL tears. They're not like Achilles tendon, like major, major things. And honestly, I think if the Carolina Panthers had been more competitive, we might have seen Christian McCaffrey before the end of the season, but we didn't. And obviously that was really tough, and that burned a lot of fantasy players last year. And I think we'll see the effects of that too. Like, I think a lot of people will be gun shy to take him. I think he's definitely worth it though. Like, the range of outcomes, I think CMC finishes as RB1 more times than Kamara finishes RB1. But that said, I mean, Kamara did finish as RB1 last season, and he put together an amazing season, even with the QB turmoil. So, you know, I don't think you're going wrong with any of these guys.
Yeah, I mean, coin flip here, right? Like, it does, yeah. I mean, arguably, like, I've got Kamara 3 behind Cook. So, like, I've got CMC 1, you know. I'm not, as you said, Samantha, like, I'm not going to be gun-shy because of these random injuries for McCaffrey. You know, it sucked last year. Thankfully, I didn't have him in any leagues, but it didn't help my case for any of my leagues last year. It was just a bad season.
Listen, you just took Mike Davis from the CMC manager. Love it.
Yeah, I definitely snagged him pretty quick in one of my dynasty leagues. I snatched him pretty quickly. So that was nice for me. But as far as Kamara and CMC, like, when you're talking Kamara, CMC, Cook, like, you know, you're going to be fine with any of these guys. And yeah, if they don't finish number one, they finish number six, like, the return on the value there is going to be fine. So don't sweat it. You're going to be fine with any of these guys. But I want to jump over here to Tampa Bay. And, you know, we saw a pretty interesting running game here for Tampa last year. You know, Ronald Jones was like the guy earlier in the season, and then later in the season, and especially in the playoffs, Leonard Fournette was a beast. Yeah, right. I mean, like, I didn't even know that was that was a thing until, like, it happened last year. Apparently, that was a nickname that everybody knew but me, apparently.
I had, a Super Bowl prop, and it was, like, Fournette first touchdown plus, like, 1050. So, I mean, it didn't hit, but that certainly was a moniker that a lot of people were using.
Yeah. So we've got those two, and then they also added Gio Bernard, who is, you know, a fairly capable running back, especially pass catching, which is something they are desperately needing. How do you see this backfield, like, the touches breaking down for these three?
I think your guess is as good as mine. I think Rojo and Fournette have very similar ADPs, and you could really just make a case for one over the other. The problem is that Bruce Arians is just as capricious and mercurial as, you know, Bill Belichick with running backs. And it is really tough because you'll see Rojo get all his carries one week and you're like, all right, he's the guy. And then he's benched or something. And, you know, it's a frustrating backfield. It's
you
a backfield.
You looked at me wrong.
Right. You wear the wrong socks today, dude. Like, I'm not super high on this backfield, especially. And I wasn't high on the backfield before Gio Bernard was added. And that's just another component that will probably take away more of, like, Fournette's touches, I think, just in terms of, like, pass catching role and whatnot. I'm trying to avoid it. It's one of those backfields, kind of like the Cardinals backfield, that you're like, if you're in that situation, you're not.
Good luck.
Yeah. Because you're going to be pulling your hair out every week, like, not really, really knowing how Bruce Arians feels that day. So, your guess is as good as mine.
The only time I've taken any of these guys, and it's been Fournette and Gio only for some weird reason, is in best ball. just because I don't have to worry about it. Exactly, it's just yeah. If they do well, they're going to go in the lineup, and then I don't have to think about it.
Yeah, so. Gio's that guy you pick up for 1 week every fantasy season. Right? On waivers because Joe Mixon got hurt.
Like, yeah.
Well, it's Gio week. Let's see.
And then it's not.
Yeah, so.
Yeah, you raised a good point about both of them being decent best ball plays because I think
They're going to have huge weeks.
They're like high variance guys. They're like running back versions of DJ Moore. Where
it and is you a, can get them so cheap still. Exactly, like super exactly. cheap.
But yeah, keep an eye on them for best ball. For season long, I'm not super interested.
No, season long, I want nothing to do with them because you're never going to know when to start them unless there's a ton of injuries. And then it's just like you just fell into super luck there. So, mm-hmm. All right.
Yeah, we can move on to wide receivers now.
Yeah, wide receivers. Crazy. I think it is. Yeah, Jeff, so, it's you, so man. I know AJ's name's on here, but that's you now.
Get out of here. No, this is one of those interesting divisions that kind of is missing a middle when you're looking at ADP. So you have Calvin Ridley, fourth, Mike Evans, 13th. You have Chris Godwin, 16th, DJ Moore at 18th. And then you drop off a little bit to Robbie Anderson at 31. Michael Thomas at 42, because we know that he's going to miss roughly half the season. Antonio Brown at 43. You have Russell Gage at 58 and Tre'Quan Smith at 62. And it's interesting, because I'm sure if we were to look now, Tre'Quan Smith is probably a little bit closer to teammate Marquez Callaway than he is to Russell Gage probably at ADP at this point.
Yeah, I guess, like, obviously, we can start with Ridley. I think his role is rock solid in that offense. He already had 143 targets last year, seventh most in the NFL. So I think it's going to increase or stay the same. In terms of, like, the Saints guys, obviously, Thomas is a big, big loss for New Orleans. Tre'Quan Smith is probably the de facto wide receiver one at this point. So I think you're getting good value. I forgot what you actually said. It was his ADP, but you're getting good value where he is. And then you can get like a hot start from him for the first number of games. So, yeah. And then in terms of Carolina, DJ Moore has been a very, very frustrating case for fantasy football. You know, he finishes good, but he has these high variance weeks of like 25 points or 2 points. And, you know, we talked about Sam Darnold and the concerns that we've had with Darnold. I think he finishes probably better than wide receiver 20, but I'm not sure how much better. He's in a very similar situation in terms of like competition for targets because, you know, they did lose Curtis Samuel during free agency, but they got Terrace Marshall. So I think that's maybe like a slightly better situation for Moore, but not too much better. And then it's kind of up in the air if Darnold is better than Bridgewater. So yeah, the wide receivers are kind of all over the place except for Calvin Ridley and the Bucks guys.
Well, since we're on DJ Moore, we wanted to actually delve into something with him real quick. So we'll just get to that question.
Yeah.
With DJ Moore, I mean, the QB carousel that he's dealing with is almost apropos of, like, Allen Robinson, you know, where it seems like every, like, 3.5 weeks it's a different quarterback. So, and just almost like the diet version of Allen Robinson, he's finishing, you know, wide receiver 20, you know, and he's very consistent, and his trajectory is very good considering the situation. Do you believe that Sam Darnold keeps him closer to like the wide receiver 20 range, or do you think that he could actually flirt with top 15 status?
He could definitely flirt with top 15 status. He has been a victim of poor quarterback play for sure throughout his career. He's a guy on the topic of best ball that I think is a good best ball guy. So you don't go bald, pulling your hair out every single week, trying to figure out if you want to start DJ Moore like I did. I had this like, terrible team that I drafted with literally a bartender and some other, like the bar, like I spent so much time at this bar that they invited me to their fantasy league, which I think is kind of hilarious. Like a whole like league of the people that work at the office at that restaurant. And anyway, I just had this team of like Deontay Johnson, AJ Brown, and like DJ Moore. and it was a lot of frustration last season. So, yeah.
A lot of up and down weeks for sure.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And my running backs were like Nick Chubb and Miles Sanders, and Nick Chubb got hurt early, and Miles Sanders.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I had high hopes for that team, but yeah, it didn't turn out super, super well.
You know, it's funny we bring up DJ Moore and how, like, you know, he was QB or wide receiver 20 last year. I just wrote about him. I did an article about wide receiver targets by air yards. And I looked at DJ Moore and I was shocked that he was fifth in total air yards last year. And that was only on 118 targets.
Yeah.
I mean, Teddy's not a deep guy, like a deep ball guy. So like Darnold can be at least. So like I'm thinking this is only going to be good for him. And so, yeah, if we, you know, I think wide receiver 20-ish is like his floor. Mm-hmm. I think he's only going to go up. So like his ADP is pretty low, in my opinion. I'm going to have a lot of DJ Moore on my teams. And in best ball, I've already got a ton of him. It just seems like he just keeps falling to me. I'm like, oh, fine. I'll take him again. Like, I'm just going to reap the benefits of this. Like, his ADOT is over 11, and I don't see that dropping at all. Like, everything just says, like, he's going to be better. And, yes, I get Christian McCaffrey's returning, but Curtis Samuel's gone. So, like... Christian McCaffrey returning is not
Robbie Anderson.
I mean, yeah. That too. I get it.
You got to play the shower narrative. You know, shout out to Adam Levitan for that one. But you got to play the shower narrative. Yeah, where they played together in New York. They showered together. The boys, they play together. They clean together. It's just that simple. And who was Sam Darnold's best wide receiver? It was Robbie Anderson. And that was on a team with legitimately nobody behind him. And Robbie Anderson probably shouldn't be considered a wide receiver one for like a traditional NFL team. And he turned him into a legitimate wide receiver two in fantasy.
I mean, let's be real though. Like, and you said this, there was literally nothing else on that team. Robbie Anderson is not the best target.
What are
on
you
this
saying
team.
About Rashad Perriman?
Wow. But what you saw though, is that he was still getting the top coverage and stuff like that. And he was still blowing out mostly. That's one of those guys who he's boomer bust, but you're talking ADOT, like Robbie Anderson. It's
of course, yeah.
ADOT, so like, but
I'm just saying, regardless though, DJ Moore is
where you know that both of them are field stretchers, but DJ Moore's, you know, ability to run really almost the entire route tree is what makes him special, yeah, as opposed to just a really good wide receiver.
I think. Look, I don't disagree that. That's a good target as well, but I'm thinking DJ Moore is going to be great this year. His ADP is at wide receiver 24. I think he's going to finish way above that this year. He's going to break his value easily. So I do want to dive into this Calvin Ridley talk a little bit more, though. You talked about it a little bit already, Samantha. You know, Julio Jones is gone, and you know, we've seen plenty of games, unfortunately, where Calvin Ridley is the only receiver on the field for this team because Julio gets hurt a lot, it feels like. But in a season where teams can now game plan for Calvin Ridley being, you know, the only receiver, Julio Jones not being there, do we see his production increasing or decreasing with the loss of Julio Jones there?
Yeah, I think it'll stay the same or increase. In terms of what you're saying, like, as Ridley being the only receiver on the field, that's not necessarily how I see it. I saw flashes of greatness from Russell Gage last season. I think that Kyle Pitts has lots of some things that he has to work on to make the leap from college to NFL, but you know, mostly in the blocking sense, but I think they're going to use him as an oversized receiver, really. Yeah. So I don't necessarily.
Huge.
Yeah. So I don't necessarily think that teams are going to look at that and be like, oh, he's the only weapon. Like, let's put him in triple coverage or anything like that. So I think, you know, like I said, he had the seventh most targets in the NFL. I don't, like, you can't go too far up from that. So I think increase or stay the same. And you got to think about game script too. Like, we talked about this I think that the Falcons will be throwing a lot. All that kind of favors a good season for Ridley again.
And I made Jeff send me this screenshot of the Rotoviz split tool here because he has access to it and I don't. Shout out to Rotoviz. You guys, this is an awesome tool. I need to finally throw out the change for it. But in the games that we're seeing for the last 3 or 4 years here, that Calvin Ridley was on the field and Julio was not. Now, this doesn't take account in the games that Julio, got hurt in mid-game. But the games where Julio missed the entire game, Calvin Ridley PPR points went up by almost 5.5. So from 14.6 to 20.1. So I'm all in on Calvin Ridley just being a beast this year. His targets go up. His yardage goes up. His receptions go up. It's just, he's going to be great. Like, this guy is amazing. And, I don't see any reason why you should be gun shy on drafting him just because Julio Jones is out of the picture here. And they brought in other guys here. So where do you think Ridley ranks at the end of the season? I mean, I think he could easily be wide receiver 5 or higher. I don't see any reason why he couldn't be.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's a top 4 guy. I think there's a total possibility that he could end up as wide receiver 1. That's not my prediction. I think I would
Devontae Adams
I would put money
Diggs.
In probably Hill, Diggs, or Adams a little bit more.
Yeah,
but that absolutely. Said, like, Ridley could finish as the top wide receiver. And I just think, his ceiling is astronomical. Just a lot of things working with him.
Totally agree. So... what else have we got here?
We got to talk about that guy from that team in New Orleans.
Yeah, I guess so. Jeff, you want to do that one?
Yeah. I mean, it's been an interesting 365 days, to say the least, for Michael Thomas. And with him expected to miss into October, more than likely. I know you mentioned Traquan Smith, but do you put any other... players, wide receivers specifically, into the target leader role while Michael Thomas is out?
Yeah, I guess I don't know that there's anyone that I'm super, super high on. I mean, I guess Marquez Callaway would be the next guy, and he's going super, super deep. So he's going undrafted in most people's leagues. So he's definitely a guy that I think, like, people will maybe pick up and early season could be effective, but I'm not drafting them or targeting them. Traquan Smith is also a later round type guy that I think could definitely return value, but I'm not super, super high in any of the receivers right now.
Yeah, I want nothing to do with any of this passing game. I really just don't. Like, I'm taking maybe some of the quarterbacks, Winston or Hill in a QB, in a super flex or a QB, 2 QB league. But the receivers, like, even Michael Thomas, I've seen Michael Thomas fall to like the 8th round in some best balls. And I'm still just like, eh. Cause this guy doesn't seem like he has his head on straight at this point. Like,
I just think that's the only way you can take Michael Thomas is in best ball, because it's one of those things, especially if you're like a wide receiver heavy drafter of best ball, like, you can make him your wide receiver 4 and he could be the cherry on top because you at least have a stable in front of him, because you don't want to have to, but you don't want to burn a roster spot in redraft leagues, because what happens if your team's decimated by injuries? The first person to go is the guy that's not going to play for another 4 to 6 weeks, and that's Michael Thomas. And you don't want to invest potentially like a 6th round pick and redraft in him to have to cut him a month into the season.
Well, so I see what you're saying, where, like, okay, you could take him as your wide receiver 4, or maybe even later sometimes in best ball. My thought is, like, if you're a wide receiver heavy and that's going to be your wide receiver 4 or 5, right? Like, at that point, like, you're super thin at running back, or, you need a tight end.
Are you thin at running back, though? Are you really thin at running back? Because running backs don't matter.
If
I'm kidding.
I feel you though, but like
especially if you're drafting like 101 and it's a turn pick where you can potentially get him, let's say 8-9 turn and he's the 901. At that point, you've already had CMC. You maybe have Mike Davis. Apparently, how this podcast has worked. You have those two running backs. So that means
gotten them both rounds a couple two times.
Through four. You take a wide receiver round five. You're already in the running back wasteland. You know, so then you're taking another one there. And then if you really want, after you're doing the 8-9 turn, you could maybe get a James Conner or a Jamal Williams or a Gus Edwards to go along with Michael Thomas. So then there's not a whole lot of bell cow stuff. So you're going to have to dip in at some point when you get closer to the double digit rounds in any draft when you're talking about picking up a running back anyway. So unless you're going ultra elite early, you're pretty much hoping that a running back touches something that like an Allen Robinson, or I'm just trying to think of like those guys that are going like the fourth, fifth round. Like, would you rather have Allen Robinson or would you rather have J.K. Dobbins, who has backup just got paid $10 billion? Or do you want Kareem Hunt as maybe like the legitimate like RB2 in the NFL because he is a former rushing leader and you know that he's going to catch the ball more often than Nick Chubb is?
Then
you're hoping those guys follow you. So
you've already done
how many ifs did I just say there? There's so many ifs.
I've been taking Allen Robinson over all those guys, you know, 9 times out of 10. You know, got to mix it up here and there. But I don't know, Samantha, like, what do you think? Like, is Michael Thomas a guy that you're drafting in best ball right now? If it's round 8 or 7, you know, and he's sitting there, are you taking that risk? Because, like, I'll be honest, like, I haven't, just because even when he was on the field last year, like, it wasn't great because Breeze wasn't there.
I mean, that's definitely a concern. The QB battle is going to be a concern if, for whatever reason, Taysom Hill ends up being starting
that's quarterback. The problem.
That's going to be like bad news for Michael Thomas, even when we do see a return to the field. So there's certainly a risk. But that said, when you're in that ninth round or later, like, I mean, at that point, you're kind of just looking for upside, and that's kind of what all of best ball is. So I think that I would probably take a risk on him, but it's going to be late.
Yeah, I have not been able to pull the trigger on him, but let's move over here to Tampa Bay. And, you know, we saw Chris Godwin he was a super popular pick last year after having a pretty monster 2019. You know, injuries aside, he just still wasn't really that great when he was on the field in 2020. I mean, what can we expect from Godwin in 2021?
It's difficult to say because even when we did see him last year, he was still not – I mean, he finished as wide receiver 32. He was like wide receiver 23 on a per-game basis. So we're not even talking about like, oh, it's because he was missing games. He really wasn't necessarily the top target. We saw a lot of Mike Evans games with like 2 catches for 2 yards and 2 touchdowns, which was an actual stat line that came out. I mean, it's tough. Like, there's tons of weapons on that team. Brady loves to spread the ball around. He loves to target his tight ends. Like, Gronk's gonna definitely get a number of red zone looks. And I don't necessarily think that we're gonna see wide receiver 32 numbers this year. But it's a pretty acute fall to, you know, the wide receiver 2 range versus where he was being drafted last year. The expectations for him last year. I mean, I would probably take him as like a later wide receiver 2, but I'm not nearly as I was all in on him last year. So it's I'm definitely backing off him this season.
Yeah, there's a lot of targets because you think too, not even just like him being healthy, but now you have the OJ Howard being healthy. You have Gio, you have playoff Lenny. There's a lot. And even like Scotty Miller, you know, and Tyler Johnson are gonna steal people. And even Jalen Darden's been, you know, the training camp, you know, the hero so far. So it's brutal. But I guess at this point, let's move to tight ends. Our last position group we're gonna talk about. And very interesting, we've been talking about Kyle Pitts. As a rookie, he is 6th right now in ADP at the position, half-point PPR. Then you have a pretty big fall off to Rob Gronkowski at 17, Adam Trautman at 18, then another precipitous fall with Hayden Hurst at 27. You have the newly minted Carolina Panther, Dan Arnold, at 30, and the guy that he's more than likely replacing, Ian Thomas, at 35. We'll stick with Kyle Pitts here. He's pretty much been appointed one of those guys that could be the new generational, because he's actually young enough to where Kelsey's all up where the generations work. Anyways, it also matters, too, that Hayden Hurst's fifth-year option was not picked up. Do you agree with the idea of doing that and then essentially giving Pitts the key to the tight end position, not only just even for this year, but like being relied on as a tight end one going forward?
Yeah. I mean, I think we're going to see a lot of Kyle Pitts this season. It's not just that they used a number four overall pick on him. It's that they also chose to not take a quarterback. Like, that is a big statement. And I think that there's no way that we're not going to see a lot of him. And we've seen, I mentioned this before, that his kind of shortcomings were in the blocking, but I think we're going to see a lot of him in terms of targets. He ranked near perfect in production, athleticism, draft score from Next Gen Stats. There have been almost no prospects that have ranked as high as he has. Mm-hmm. He's got almost identical measurables as Travis Kelce. I mean, everyone kind of draws that parallel to him, but it's kind of fair. And Travis Kelce missed his whole first season with an injury, but when the next season, which really was his first rookie season, he was super, super productive. So I think that we will see, and with the subtraction of Julio Jones and everything like that, I think we will see a lot of Kyle Pitts. And tight end six feels rich for a lot of people. Now that said, I'm pretty sure I took Kyle Pitts as the third tight end off the board in the Scott Fish Bowl. So I'm definitely pretty high on him.
I did it. I did that in a best ball league. I
got him 401 in the Scott Fish Bowl, which is there's a tight end in that one. So I thought that was a pretty good.
Yeah, that's pretty nice. I haven't seen Pitts go six ever, so I don't know where the ADP is coming from. So I'm not gonna lie.
I think that's just betting on upside, because I just pull Fantasy Pros again.
I'm not
after, and it's Dallas Goedert, and you already know that Zach Ertz is pretty much lurking the Grim Reaper.
Still there.
So immediately you're like, yeah, I'm cool with him at six, because and then you're even talking Fant, Tonyan, who may even be higher, Thomas Higbee. There's just way too many questions behind him, considering somebody's got to replace Julio, and it's not going to be Russell Gage. So
yeah, I'm always nervous about rookie tight ends because of we all know that there's a bit of a learning curve for these guys, but he feels different, right? They're already talking about lining him up basically as a wide receiver more often than not. Like, you're not blocking. That's why they get Hayden Hurst.
It's definitely also a testament to the way that the position has evolved over the years. Mm-hmm. Because I think maybe we didn't see as much fantasy production in the past because they did make it was just different. I feel they really did force tight ends to be that dual kind of role with the receiving and the blocking. Yeah. Whereas I really just think that we're going to see a lot of Kyle Pitts just lined up as a receiver. So,
yeah. So him at tight end six right now, I see him more times than not going ahead of Mark Andrews. So I could agree with a tight end five, but I've also seen him go ahead of Hockenson. I've even seen him go ahead of Kittle.
I did take him tight end four. Sorry, now I'm realizing I did not take him over Kittle or Waller or Kelce. So,
Kelce and Waller are the one too easy, I feel like. And they're first and second round in a tight end premium league. They're second, third round in any other league, I feel like.
Yeah. Kelce and Waller were off the board in the first.
Oh, God, they're crazy. Yeah. They were they were basically better than the majority of receivers last year in Scott Fish. Kittle is a top-notch guy, but he's got the injury and the quarterback problems as well. So I don't know. Hockenson, Andrews, and Pitts, to me, are kind of throw a dice on the ground, see which one it lands on. To me, they all have potential problems, you know, issues. They all have risks. They all have massive upside. I think Andrews is probably the safest one of the three because we know he's Lamar's guy, especially red zone. He's like the only guy who wants to run up the middle and get killed in that offense. Hockenson has a new quarterback, but we know the targets are going to be there. We hope Pitts is going to be legit. You know, like that's kind of the problem with him. It's like we all just kind of hope. So like I don't know. I'm very iffy on Pitts. I've taken a couple places in best ball just because I want some exposure, but I'm not like all in on him like some people.
Yeah, and I think it's important to think about, especially tight end, like just because I think that the position has a lot of variance, that you should be thinking about it more in terms of tiers. Like that top tier, Kelce, Waller, Kittle, they're a top tier, and then there's a drop-off to Hockenson, Andrews, and Pitts. And I think that those three are just in their own tier. Then there's, I think, a pretty significant drop-off to like the next guys that are Tonyan, Goddard, Fant, like,
I think Tonyan's being super undervalued now that Rodgers is back. I really do. Like, I've been snagging him a lot of places.
You can get him super late.
Nobody's like, everybody adjusted with Adams and Jones. Everybody forgot about Tonyan. It's like, thanks. Like, I don't want Goddard. I want Tonyan instead. Like, you know, as Jeff said, like, Ertz is still there. Like, Goddard's not the guy still because Ertz is still there. This is not happening. So yeah, I like Tunyon a lot there, but let's move on here.
Stable tight end situation here.
Yeah. So over to your team, Carolina, you know,
nice and stable there.
I don't really know what to think with this. Like, you know, there's a lot of people that really liked Ian Thomas a couple years ago, even last year. And now they brought in Dan Arnold, who's like a monster when it comes to workouts and things like that. But can any of these guys actually be productive for fantasy now, you know, now they don't have, you know, now that Sam Darnold's around, I guess maybe. Like, he likes his tight ends, I guess. You know, Chris Herndon was a thing.
He sort of was a thing. I mean, he had 45 targets, fifth most targeted pass catcher on the Jets last season. So, I mean, Darnold throws to his tight ends, but it's not necessarily, like, a crutch for him. Now, that said, I do think some subpar quarterbacks or quarterbacks that are struggling do lead more on tight end play. So, I mean, we could see a little bit more, but I'm not interested in either Arnold or Thomas in any kind of normal format. They're like in the 30s, I feel like, for ADP. And I mean, they're kind of an afterthought unless you're in a really deep league.
Yeah, I'm out. Carolina tight ends are done. I like Dan. I took Dan Arnold as like my last pick in Scott Fishbowl because I was like, why not?
That's a good pick in the, like, Scott Fishbowl.
It was like, what, round 25 or whatever craziness that is?
22.
I know. I exaggerated. Thank you, Jeff.
So no need to re-smirch a guy. So the next thing we're going to talk about is Adam Trautman. And it's a real interesting case study if you look at him because there's a lot of athleticism attached to him. There's now an open role with Jared Cook gone. But again, we keep falling back to this unknown of the QB position. So you have two things going against them. Unknown production, unknown QB. Where do you see Trautman's floor? And is the floor dictated more by Taysom Hill or by Jameis Winston?
Yeah, I'm not sure that I want to necessarily like assign a floor for him. He's just like one of those guys that I'm hyping up as a sleeper. I think at tight end 19 is his ADP or something like that. And that feels low for a guy, especially that has that, like, a lot of targets just vacated with Michael Thomas, especially early season. I mean, Sean Payton has produced really strong fantasy tight ends in the past. I mean, a lot of that was Jimmy Graham, but like, I think we could definitely see production. We saw production from Jared Cook before that. And so, I mean, I think like his floor is probably his ADP, and then his ceiling is probably in that top 12 for sure. I just don't know where it's – tight end is one of those really difficult positions, and then you add in the kind of chaos with the quarterback competition. I'm going to assume – now, I'm just going to say, like, I am not a tape person. I'm not a quarterback expert. But I'm going to assume that Jameis Winston is going to be better for pretty much all of the offensive players from a fantasy perspective. So he will probably help Troutman's value. Also, just with, like, Taysom Hill playing that kind of weird hybrid tight end position also could hurt him. So I'm not totally sure. I'm not drafting him as a top 12 guy, but I think as your second tight end, he's got definite sleeper value.
I have seen him go really early in, really? Especially in some best ball. Like,
I can see for best ball, especially with like the early season upside.
I've seen him go ahead of guys like Logan Thomas and like Higby still, and I'm like, wow. Like, I don't know. Like, maybe they'll prove me wrong, but that's a little too rich for me. I see the upside.
I'd rather have Logan Thomas.
Yeah, I mean, I see the upside, and it, well, I mean, we talked about this, and Jeff brought up that huge stat. I forget exactly what it was. You found that article about how
on PFF
with the fact that Fitzpatrick is like the quarterback who throws the least of tight ends of like anybody.
He was 27th out of 30, if I remember.
Just about, yeah. So.
Yeah. You're looking at it's like Troutman is strictly upside, but that's why I think he's a really good case study because he's a big gray area. And you unless you're like his best friend, I feel like, or you're one of the coaches essentially on the Saints, you can't really define what he is just because he hasn't had the opportunity and now he's gonna have to learn from two different quarterbacks.
Look, could I see taking him over, you know, Jonnu Smith and Gronk and Hunter Henry? Sure. Fine.
Yeah.
But, like, he's right in that – yeah, he's right in that territory of those guys, like Irv Smith. But, like, when you start talking about Higby and Logan Thomas, you guys know they have the role, the job. That's too rich for me. Like, and I've seen it – especially on underdog, I've seen guys time and time again take him super early. Where I'm like,
insider names like industry names that's super popular with people that are like in their basketball leagues, but are not. He's not going to be popular in people's home leagues.
I just feel like it's one of those things. Like you said, like I wonder if it's one of those things where he's being, you know, talked about so much on Twitter that people are just going like, oh, I got to get him, and they click his name. And, like, I literally see him go, and, like, I'm not even thinking about tight end at the point in my best ball leagues. And then I look at him like, wait, Troutman just went. Did I miss something? Oh, no, I didn't. No, they just took him way too early. I'm good. I'm still good. So it's just, yeah, it's crazy.
In a normal non-tight end premium league, I mean, the onesie positions, I feel like you can definitely wait on.
Yeah.
Like, I did a mock with CVS Fantasy, so it was like Jamie Eisenberg and Heath Cummings and Steffi Smalls was in the draft too, and it was really, really fun. I got, like, Logan Thomas as my last pick in the draft. It was – so people really, really waited is what I mean for tight end.
Yeah.
So, I mean,
keep in mind, everybody listening, that's not happening in your draft.
It's probably not happening in your draft. But
I love our industry mocks, by the way. And we just did one with Fantasy Six Pack, and we're going to have the analysis article going out soon. You're going to see where, like, Dak goes in, like, the ninth round. That's not happening, guys. Sorry. This is not. Like, don't. Basically, pay attention to the order that these players go in, not the rounds they go in, because we wait. The industry people wait on quarterbacks and tight ends more often than any other positions when it comes to your home leagues. I don't know, Jeff. Like, do your home leagues wait on positions like that, or like? It like the industry ones do?
I do mainly auctions with home leagues. Like my main home league, we switched the auction, thank God. But I think when you're doing more cashless, like, because we surround ourselves with it, you know, we are saturated, we are dripping right. stats from our pores pretty much, which is probably a big concern. But so for us, it's a little different. But like, you also, you have to know your draft, know your rules and all that. So that mm-hmm. also makes a difference too. So if somebody, like, let's say just for the auction format for fun, like if somebody's going to pay, you know, $50 out of like a $200+, you know, dollar auction for Kelsey, well, you know, Waller's going to fall somewhere in there. If you're a tiers based drafter, like I prefer to be, well, just scratch those names off the list. And then you have to readjust pretty much. So I think that's, it's very similar though to like taking Kelsey, like in the top three in your normal home draft type of thing.
Yeah.
Let's finish this off, dude.
Yeah. I think we are done. So rapid fire here, over under on Gronk smashes this season.
Yeah, Gronk's over under on regular season receiving touchdowns is 5, with the under juice to 130. So I'm going to go with 5.
Yeah.
Wow. Way to middle that there.
I'm going over. I'm going 7. Do it.
Samantha wants to make her money back.
I'm just going with, I just know Vegas is smarter than me. So that's kind of at least the ballpark that I would go with.
It's interesting because player props is where you got to find the value. That's the easiest.
You can definitely find a lot of value in the player props.
But 5 just seems, it seems like they've middled it because they know it's like, yeah. Well, they have 72.5, you know, tight ends there. Good luck.
And
yeah, OJ Howard's definitely gonna have a role.
He's gonna have a 3 touchdown game. You watch. So yeah, I'm going 7.
And he had a legitimate role before he got hurt. Of course, he got hurt when he was really peaking. Go figure. You know, drink on that one pretty much.
All right. Well, that is it for the show, Samantha. I want to thank you for coming on. It was a great time. Great information as always. But let everybody know where they can find you on the internet and what you got going on this season.
Sure. Yeah. You can find all of my written work on actionnetwork.com. It's all free, non-paywalled. So read any of my analysis. I've been doing lots of player profiles before the season, and I will be appearing on the Action Network's Fantasy Flex podcast. You can also listen to me occasionally on KOA Denver if you're in the Denver area, AM 850. So I'm sometimes on there with Ben Albright and Ryan Edwards talking Broncos, but also betting and fantasy. So
nice.
Kind of all over the place. And then follow me on Twitter at SamanthaNFL. And if you're a Gen Z, you can follow me on TikTok.
TikTok,
at SPVD.
TikTok champion over here.
Yeah, I make very silly TikToks, but I do give out legitimate advice too.
Nice, yeah. All right. Well, again, thank you for coming on. It was a great time having you here, and definitely have to do it again. So,
for sure. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you.
Have a good night. All right. Jeff, I think that is all we've got.
Yes. Because you'll never guess this. I still have articles to write. Go figure for the Action Network. So, so yeah, I will be up again, even though it isn't a Thursday night. It is a night that ends in a Y, so.
Alrighty.
Yes.
Enjoy doing that.
Check out the close report on the Action Network coming out tomorrow morning, so.
All right. I'm just surrounded by Action Network people here tonight, so.
And sour beer drinkers, so don't you forget it.
Fantasy Six Pack, yeah! No, I'm just kidding. Yeah. All right, man. You push the buttons or am I?
You can push the buttons because we don't worry about AJ burping tonight. So
yeah, right. All right,
AJ. I hope you're feeling better, bud. Nobody wants to see me in my Ghostbusters 2 picture anymore. But I will, if I am back on, I will have better lighting. Hopefully by the next time.
It was a little last minute, but I get it.
I have the producer setup, which is my kitchen table. So
it's okay. We get a little last minute notice. You know, it is what it is. So all right. See y'all, actually, we are, just to remember, we are back on Wednesday this week because I'm not trying to do the show Thursday and then try to get on the road on Friday. I'm just feel like it's a late night when I got to do this. So Wednesday is when our show is back this week, and we will be finishing our previews with the NFC West. So see you all then.
Shout out to Lisa Ann for liking the tweet for the show.
Yeah, absolutely. I saw that. That's awesome.
Yeah.
All right. Peace.